Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers will escort you inside the walls of Carl Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made drums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here.
Turn it up, pretend and get lively. The ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown. Zone. It is knocked up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green, and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of your Inquirer Sports Bengals podcast. Paul Daner Jr. here with you. We're deep inside the Bengals
deep
facility.
It's almost like Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop deep, you know, when he was trying to convince, you know, Sergeant Todd, you know, he's got to go deep undercover.
We are deep undercover. Although we're not undercover here. We're very easily seen.
We are very easily seen.
A really big window right by the entrance to the Bengals locker room that we're at right now. So I'm sure someone will walk by here, probably point and laugh. Yeah, so here we are, OTAs week two.
Yeah.
Feel the excitement.
It is. I felt the cold.
So last week, it felt like we were in the middle of dog days of training camp.
Right.
And this week felt like prep for week 12 at Cleveland.
Yeah, it definitely was strange. It was chilly.
It was. Marvin Jones was wearing the hoodie cape underneath his shoulder pads. Which is a rare look. You don't see the hoodie popping out.
Yeah, the hoodie often. The hoodie under the shoulder. You know, how do I phrase this? Usually, it's like you go to like the youth basketball game or like the high school game, and you see like the kid who's just got the really long sleeve baggy like T-shirt on under his jersey, and you're
that
like, oh,
out. It puffs out. The jersey's a little tight, and the shirt puffs out.
And you're
kind
of like, oh, that. You know, that kid, it's nice that he's out here. But he's but Marvin Jones is a little better than that. But, yeah, so it's a little surprising to see.
Yeah, you know, and his little hoodie hood would flap in the wind when he ran. And it was kind of weird. It kind of at first, you know, you get so used to seeing hair come out the back of the helmet that I assumed it was somebody else just with the hair flopping. And I was like, that's a hood. He's wearing a hoodie out here.
Yeah.
Of course, Southern California, Marvin Jones.
That is true.
It's he should be used to it by now, though. I mean, he's going his fourth season here. He's got to suck it up. but it was a little bit chilly. Did you ever, if you play basketball, did you ever wear the shirt, the T-shirt underneath the jersey or the long sleeve shirt or anything like that?
No.
I always respect.
I didn't have the big long sleeve shirt. I did have the. And not even the baggy T-shirt, but kind of like the, not now. Nowadays they have like the really form-fitting Under Armour. They didn't have that back in the late '90s. So, I would wear a T-shirt because I was really skinny as a high schooler. But so maybe I was. Maybe people looked at me and was like, "Oh, look at that little guy out there." It could be true. I could dunk though. So you know, I got to throw that out there for the podcast.
Is that real?
Represent. Oh yeah,
you could dunk.
Yes.
Can you still dunk?
No. Three ACLs later, I cannot still dunk.
You could dunk?
Yes. I was 5'10". I could hide. Yeah, I had like a 42-inch. I'd do the box jumps.
What?
Yeah, man. I was an
athlete.
Excuse
me. This is not fake surprise. I mean, I cannot gasp loud enough at this.
Yeah.
You had a 40-inch vertical leap?
Yeah. The 42-inch box jumps. Yeah. Like you would do. I was a high jumper. And basketball player, I could dunk off 2 feet, two hands.
Really?
You know, 1 foot, right-handed. I couldn't quite palm the ball lefty. I could easily do a right-handed, but yeah. Big hands, I could jump, and then the knees went, though.
Yeah.
The first time I dunked, I was, I'll never forget, I was in the, my backyard. I had blown my right knee. So I dunked on a torn ACL. I jumped off my left leg. This was in the backyard.
Why were you still attempting to do dunks when you had just
blown
out your ACL?
Well, because I was not a smart child.
Yeah.
and here, to bring it all full circle, so I was doing this off my left leg. I was jumping and landing on my left leg because the right one I couldn't do anything with. So then fast forward to, 15 years later, and I totally obliterated the left knee. I think I paid the price for that.
Wow.
Unseen glory. I have to find the picture. My dad took a picture of me in the backyard doing that. Why he wasn't yelling at me to stop?
Yes.
I don't know. But then again, he also has three ACL injuries, so maybe he was just like, whatever, man. This is what we do in this family.
That's what we do. We do two things. We pop ACLs and we dunk. did you ever dunk in a game or of any sort?
No. No, it was all the last time I did was in college in like intramural. Because I wasn't healthy enough to play. I missed all of the seasons with rehab. Yeah.
How far down do people's jaws drop when you rise up and dunk?
It was a surprise.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a surprise. Yeah. I mean,
although
and I don't mean it like you can't be a good athlete. I just you're short, you're not as tall. No. You know, I wouldn't see you and be like, this guy can definitely sky.
Yeah, let's not get it twisted. I'm not Dominique Wilkins. I mean, I'd have to get the running, get a running start, dribble. I could do it on a dribble, legit, not like, carry it and run. There were no high flying, in the lane over guys. I mean, it would have to be like a fast break, So that, but yeah, man, I had a little bit, the legs wouldn't let me do it though. I could, but for long.
So then you just turned to golf.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Now I just hit the ball crooked.
Have you
as crooked as my ACLs?
Yeah. Have you been able to get out and play?
I hit some balls in Fort Wright, Kentucky. I found a grass range.
Fort Wright, beautiful Fort Wright.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
200 yards only, I think. Although some dude was hitting driver. I'm like, I don't think they'll appreciate that because there's like
across
some woods. There's some like woods back there.
Yeah, it's somebody's property.
Yeah.
So we've been. You should have tried to get into the Marvin Lewis Golf Classic charity that we went to.
Because, I should have.
But well, it was all part of your charity tour that you're on now.
Yeah.
The Jim Ossarski charity tour. So you've been to two Dalton events.
Vincent
Ray's and the Marvin Lewis Community Fund golf tournament. You're just charing it up. But the last one was the celebrity waiter night.
Was at the Hilton Cincinnati.
The Hilton, yeah.
Yeah, and it was cool. I'll say this.
A ton of players came out.
A ton of players. Andy Dalton's wide receiver, some of his linemen, even some defensive guys, which, you're always
Michael
sort
Johnson,
of interesting.
Who's
yeah.
at every charity event.
Michael Johnson.
Him and Vinny Ray are like the most – they will support every single person in the locker, no matter what they're doing, where it is, they'll be there.
Right. D'Amato Pecco, same thing. He was there. Ray Maluga showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting to see. And actually, that's why I talked to A.J. Green and Mo Sanu about it at Cincinnati.com. They're like, look, man, this just shows – to them, it shows chemistry, to see all parts of the locker room. And people may not know this, but in a lot of locker rooms, they'll divide position groups, they'll divide them up. So you have linebackers and D-line and corners and everyone sort of in different pockets of the locker room. And I don't know, it's always impressive to me, I guess, to see in a situation like this, guys from all over.
Mm-hmm.
Locker rooms are big. I mean, those are giant men with a lot of equipment. I mean, you can literally go a day and not see someone on the other end.
Yeah.
These guys showed up, and the waiter night was cool. AJ Green told me that he never was a waiter anywhere, but he was a cook at a Zaxby's chicken.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Zaxby's is good.
He's like, I can handle food, but he was very nervous about dropping wine. They were serving wine.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess if being the new guy, I'm sure AJ Green isn't concerned about dropping anything,
yeah,
especially when it comes to football. But he was very concerned about, I do not want to drop one of these wine bottles or glasses.
You cannot drop. And there's, because, you know, they're sitting up higher. You got the stems.
Right.
It can be a little dicey, but let me tell you what. Zaxby's Chicken, that's a place to be a cook at. That stuff is good.
Have you ever had it? It's a southern thing.
It's actually the first Zaxby's was in Athens, Georgia.
Okay.
So when I covered UGA, they're obviously based out of Athens. I have been to, like, what I assume is the original. I think it's the original one. If it's not there, the original is like in Atlanta, but it's like that area of Georgia is their area, and that stuff is the jam. It's all so good. You get the chicken. It's just their sauce on the chicken is just phenomenal. Okay. When we go down the south, one of our road trips down south, we'll go into a Zaxby's. We'll credit AJ Green.
Yeah,
and we'll try that out. Yeah. But yeah, so there was $150,000 at Dalton's event, which is awesome. And I mean, him and his foundation now with him and Jordan has been really cool. And it's, you know, these things, I most people don't really care about this stuff, but a lot of these guys really understand that they have an opportunity to do really good stuff.
Right.
And you can't commend guys enough for really going for it. And they've had so much success with what they've done, and they've really taken on the community of understanding, community of families that have things that happen to their kids, and understanding the importance of taking care of the parents as well as the kids, and the whole thing. It's just it's been a really cool thing. So I don't think it gets enough press. It probably doesn't get enough love. People probably really don't care. They're probably bored to tears hearing about it. But I think it's really cool. I think it's great. I think it's a side of Andy Dalton that you maybe don't get to see a lot of.
Well, that's the funny thing, Paul, is you say, well, maybe people don't want to hear about it or they don't care. But what about the flip side? When you're talking about sports in a community, you hear that. You know, someone may like to say so-and-so is the face of a franchise. Well, what does that mean? It's like you're the public-facing person, right? Mm-hmm. And being around and being a part of the city that you're in matters. I mean, I've covered plenty of athletes where Jay Cutler is one guy where people are like, you know, where is he? What does he do? Who is he? Where does he go? You know, where if you're on Twitter, if you're on Bengals Twitter and you see guys in town, people are running into them at restaurants, at the grocery store, they're taking pictures, they're taking selfies, and then obviously you have this charitable arm where they're all involved. Like Vinny Ray's thing at the elementary school up in Bond Hill, it was like there's seven guys there.
Yeah.
You know, it's 2 hours of their time, and let's face it, Paul, like, and you know this, when they don't have to be at the football stadium, they have other things they want to do. They want to be with their families, and yet they're taking their time out to show their faces in Cincinnati, which, again, when they do it, people might be like, oh, who cares? Maybe they should, but it's when they don't.
Yeah.
You hear about it, right? Like, who are these guys? They don't care about the town. They don't, you know, that type of thing. So, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving them a little love for actually, you know, being a part of the city that they play in.
To me, and as a quarterback, that's important because you have to have the whole team unite around you. And I think the best way to do that, if you're a quarterback, you don't have to be the good guy. You don't have to be the jerk. You don't have to. You can be whatever you want to be. Just be something, and own that. And he has owned that. He's really is kind of the good guy with, and he really pushes charity. And he's, you know, he's obviously religious. But I mean, he pushes that. That's what he is. And he's trying to be more of owning his own personality and not trying to be anybody else.
Right.
And I think that's good advice for a guy who has taken a lot of hits and a lot of slack around here for quote unquote lack of leadership. Can he lead a room? Is he set to be a quarterback in the way you need to be off the field? I think enough guys have rallied around him just owning who he is with stuff like this, you know, his charities and all that stuff. He's also leading, he's the face of the Taste of the NFL, which is the Bengals' biggest fundraiser thing that they do during training camp. He's going to do that. I mean, he's really kind of taken it. I think guys respect that and can rally behind that a little bit. You want to win for a guy like that. I mean, not that you need more reason to, but I think that's something.
No, it is. It's legitimate. And, you know, again, when you're talking about leadership and that type of thing, to get – it's one thing if it's all of the O-linemen showing up to help you out. Okay, maybe it's another thing if the receivers show up. Mm-hmm. But again, you got guys from around the locker room.
Yeah.
DBs, D linemen, whoever made linebackers, new acquisitions like an AJ Hawk to a veteran like Ray Maliuga, who, you know, he's the team leader, whatever. So I mean it's one of those things where it was that type of thing's impressive all the way around.
Yeah. So that's been going on, and then obviously we had week two, so week one OTAs. You know, you get the first day. So there's kind of a lot going on. There's a few new things. We saw Vontaze Burfict in week two. Vontaze Burfict noticeably absent from the working out on the side group. I think Marvin Lewis had just about enough. all the amateur doctors in attendance evaluating how Vontaze Burfict looked.
That's your fault.
It may be my fault. I don't know. And that's fine with me. But Marvin pretty much assured that we will not be viewing Vontaze Burfict doing any sort of workout.
Right.
Certainly not for the rest of this offseason.
Right.
That's fine. But it was under the idea of, and I don't know if it was me. I don't know who, you know, Marvin, as those who are familiar with the team know, tends to just get frustrated in general by just about everything that's written about the team that's at all specific. And so I'm pretty sure everybody that covers this team wrote something about how they thought Vontaze Burfict looked.
Right.
And let's be honest, we haven't been following every session of his rehab. We had like 30 to 45 minutes where we watched him try to step through a ladder.
Right.
And walk around a bit. It's the first time we've seen him do anything. And so to think that we have the specific evaluation of he's a long way off or blah, blah, blah. We had what Marvin said that he had a long way to go. And
right.
We had what we saw of him sort of being fairly ginger with some stuff. Who knows? Who really knows? But point being, we will not be doing any more of that evaluating. It appears. Marvin is putting his toy away, and he's going to let him work out on the inside practice field
right.
whenever we're allowed to be around anyway. So you had that George Iloka and Marcus Hunt both out for the second straight week this week. What we're hearing basically on this has been that they're dinged up and expectations are they'll be back by training camp. And I think if that's the case, I don't think anybody here has a problem with it.
No. So. No, that's the interesting part of this, Paul, is at least these next couple weeks, last week, these are all – quote unquote voluntary.
Yeah.
Under the CBA. I mean, they don't have, I mean, and in reality, we could have wandered in here and there's like what? The rookies and some other guys who maybe didn't qualify that should be here. But the fact that everyone is here working out kind of makes those guys stand out for their absences. But you're right, especially with Iloka, there seems to be a thought, yeah, training camp, end of July, ready to go.
Mm hmm. Marcus is a little bit more sort of shrouded in mystery, but, you know, reading through the tea leaves stuff, I think people are hoping that he'll be back by then. And if he's not, then you start to, you know, you start to consider how that will affect things. And we'll get into that over the next 2 weeks, because the next couple weeks to today, later on today, we'll kind of dip a little bit into kind of a very rough draft look at the depth chart. And we'll start with offense a little bit this week and then do some defense next week. But I want to dip into that later, and we'll talk a little bit about where Marcus Hunt could fit in what's a really crowded defensive line room. I mean, his story is just one of those that everyone's just sitting around waiting for sort of this promised potential to happen with him.
Promised by who?
Promised by...
just how big he is?
Promised by his second-round draft status.
Yes, yeah.
Promised by people using the name J.J. Watt connected to him. I mean, when he was drafted, and in the years since, talking about what he could be, people said he could be like J.J. Watt. He's has that type of game-changing physical ability. He just needs to learn the game. You know, he's a project.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
The reason I was that incredulous about Paul is just because it's, I don't know, I guess when, I understand he was a high pick, but even from the outside, when that pick was made, I didn't really look at it when he was picked. It was more of just, here's a guy who could be, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, forgive me, the team that took the flyer on the rugby player. It's like, okay, he could be awesome. I don't know. So to me, like the fact that it's not quite working out yet, I'm not surprised by that either. If that makes sense, because it's
but they needed it to, and they drafted him. I mean, there's a reason Michael Johnson's back here,
right?
Because they drafted Marcus Hunt to take over for Michael Johnson, and the fact that Michael Johnson's here tells you all you need to know about how that's worked out,
right?
And where how they think it's going to work out. I mean, I just don't think they've seen enough progress, and these injuries continue to just creep up. Now, this one probably, you know. As long as he's ever training camp, I don't think it'll be a problem. People still have a lot of hope that he can have a breakout year, but the figuring it out is over as far as I would be concerned with Marcus Hunt. Like the whole, well, he's only played football for – well, guess what? That's like 7 years now he's been playing football.
Right.
Okay? That no longer holds water. At some point, you need to be able to play and you need to be very good or you need to go.
And – Let's you got to look at the timeline here, Paul. He turns 28 in the middle of July.
Yeah.
That's very young in real people's age, but by 28, that you're kind of getting to the end of the window of effective NFL play.
30 is when it falls down. So if you're 28 and it hasn't happened yet, you've got 2 years of actual production that you can even offer.
Right, and I know D linemen play a little longer, but again, that's you're talking about healthy D linemen who maybe produced at 23, 24.
You know? And he won't have quite the wear and tear of maybe some other players.
But we're not seeing that, though, because he's been injured, right?
You're right. Maybe he's dealing with the wear and tear.
Right.
I mean, in theory, you would think he wouldn't have as much because he hasn't played as much as some of these guys coming up. But, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, it's on the pendulum of a pick that is a bust and a pick that is a hit, it's very quickly swinging towards the bust side right now. And he needs a big camp and preseason. You know, last year he had a pretty nice preseason, but it never turned anything in the regular season. Well, he needs to come out and really assume a spot and assume a role and make something happen, or else – the time has run out on you, because next year, 2016, will be the last year of his contract, and at that point, you know, you can a guy who's going to be 29 that year. I mean, he would be, in theory, the negotiation for Marcus Hunt would be, I'm going to be 30 the next time that I play for you. If you're Marcus Hunt and you're negotiating a second deal, I'm going to be 30. The next time that I play for you, and I have done, his only argument will be whatever he's done these last two seasons, because he has nothing that would get him a contract that he's done yet. I mean, it's time now for him to do something. And if he doesn't, well, they've got Will Clark here, and they love what he's doing, and they've got a pretty full room. And as I wrote last week in the FAQs, it would not be unprecedented. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. But it would not be unprecedented for Marcus Hunt to get cut. Last year, let's see, second-round pick in his third season on the defensive line, Devin Still got cut, ended up on the practice squad. Right. And, you know, speaking nothing to his personal situation, but he was cut because he wasn't good enough. He wasn't getting it done. This is the exact same scenario. I think there's more hope and potential and belief in Marcus Hunt. But this team was going to have to cut somebody from that line, and it's one of those things where you say he could be – I mean, it's possible he's among them. If he can't get in there, prove he can be healthy and start contributing. Right. So we don't need to cover the Marcus Hunt section next week when we break down the defensive line depth chart. We can pass on that. We've got that covered. But, hey – news is, we start talking, and we kind of lose control.
Yeah.
I can't control where this ship goes sometimes. I have no – which
it's
is
like a, It's like a knee without an ACL. It's just all over the place.
It's just –
which I know way too much about.
You're just
about.
Trying to get back to your dunking basketball past.
See, now it's what's going to happen is I'm going to get some tweets, and I'm going to have to, like, start training and, like, try to do this again, and then my wife will kill me.
We have to post a Vine of you dunking at some point.
See, that I'm cool with, because we can find, like, a 9-foot rim.
Yes.
And kind of, like, you know, make it look good.
Yes.
But
I will say I dunked one time, not on a 10-foot rim, on a 9-foot rim. When I was, like, playing in high school or something like that, we'd go up to this little place, and they had actually where Ignition is now, up in Mason. They used to have basketball courts up there. It's currently called Wall to Wall, but so you go up there, get in these little games, whatever. Everyone's playing on 9-foot just so they could get the field dunking in the game. Dude, the one time I came baseline and it broke open and I dunked. And I did every stereotypical cliche thing, not even realizing it. Like, I put the hands back, you know, and did like a half spin, yelled, you know. I mean, the whole thing. And then I stopped and realized, oh, my God. I just did what everybody does. Apparently, that's just what you do when you.
Yeah.
When you, not that I'd ever had that feeling before, but now. So now, when players do, I love it.
Yeah.
If you're going to dunk in a game on any level, especially the NBA, I want you to make such a fool of yourself.
Yeah. It's worth it.
It's absolutely worth it. If only for the marketing of yourself as the guy who goes completely bonkers every time he dunks or whatever. Just enjoy it. That's what I'm saying. It's like the guys that dance in the end zone. When they started getting rid of proper good dances in the end zone, I got mad. That's why I loved Jeremy Hill last year. Was actually having fun and celebrating being in the end zone, doing some dances, did the Icky Shuffle.
Right.
I learned a little bit about the Schmurda dance.
Yeah.
I learned about the Nene.
Yeah.
And all, you know, I
was going to see the whip this year. I bet you guys are going to hit the whip. I know that.
He did some whip last year. True. He did a little bit of whip. But I learned about all these dances last year.
Yeah.
See, now, and it helped him get his name on the map.
Right.
I love it. Yes. Everyone should do something.
I'm in favor. Now, I grew up at the tail end of Walter Payton in Chicago, obviously watching Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith. So I get the whole you've been there before aspect of it, which is easy to say when you are running back of that era and you were getting in, you know,
and
12
you
to
had
18
been there
times
before,
a touchdown.
Though. Yeah.
Times a year, and it's just, you know, all-time scoring leader type level. But, yeah, when you're, hey, man, I'm all about the the props, not so much, but dancing, coordination, those things are fun, man. And we're going off on another tangent here, but all that
ahead.
Stuff, I definitely loved it, and I wish
what
that
dance,
the NFL
what
wasn't.
What dance would you do if you scored a touchdown? That's the question.
You know, I don't want to say the name of it because I don't think it's politically correct. But you know, I'm a big fan of West Coast hip hop, man. I think I'd have to hop a little bit. You know, like those WC and Snoop Dogg. And,
oh yeah,
yeah. I'm not. You know, we don't need to talk about what the name of that is necessarily. But I like the way that looks, and I think if I were just right along the boundary, right along that baseline, all the way down, and you know,
two-step.
Well, two-step a little bit.
A little two-step. I always, you know what? I always liked and I imitated the Deion Sanders dance. I always thought, not that I would do that, but I always thought that was one of the best. Like, his dance was pretty sweet. I think I would just have to do my own thing. Now, you can't go to the ground.
No.
So, breakdancing's out.
No, yeah.
Because I wouldn't mind ending with a spin, but you can't. You just can't.
You can't do the... I'm not forgetting the Jerry Maguire breakdance in the end zone when, after you're, like, miraculously resuscitated from paralysis.
Right. Cuba Gooding Jr., absolutely. Which, by the way, I can't remember what agent I was talking to the other day. Oh, when I was talking with Joel Corey from CBS, who's a sort of former agent and does a lot of stuff when we talk about contract stuff, was talking about how Jerry Maguire had – like the biggest loopholes in plot lines. He, like, out of nowhere, we were just talking about AJ Green, and all of a sudden he goes, and that's why Jerry Maguire could never have been a real movie. Because he just started going off on everything that was wrong with how Jerry Maguire actually, he's like, you wouldn't have it. He was telling me all about how there's no way if someone left an organization, because it started because of Ben Dagra left CAA.
Okay.
And he's AJ Green's agent. And he's like, there's no way it would work like that where you only get one guy. Like, they follow the relationships, not who calls them first and who's the first one in. And you're not just going to be on the phone with Cuba Gooding Jr. for so long that he's the only person you end up with. That's not how it works. People go with their relationships.
Yeah. I think
Jerry Maguire tangent. Ladies and
I was gonna say we are
so far.
Oh yeah, we're just
let's bring her back home here. Let's hammer in and go to a couple things that I did want to talk about. Marvin Jones returned to practice today
with a bang, an 11-on-11.
Yeah, first play 11-on-11. Marvin Jones sprint down the sideline, beat Drake Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
And hauled in an over-the-shoulder, tiptoe against the sideline play. Looked good to me.
Yeah, touchdown.
Wasn't a touchdown.
He would have got there.
He had a tiptoe out of bounds. No touchdown.
I thought he finished all the way in.
No, he kind of had a tiptoe to hold himself in bounds. He got kind of thrown out of bounds a little bit, which Bengals fans have seen that before. But, yeah, the hoodie was in bounds. Yeah. It was a nice play. All day, Marvin Jones. I mean, Marvin Jones has told us he's looked good. We've seen the beach Instagrams. We've seen everything during his rehab process. He said he looks great. But for the first time doing football, for us to see, he did practice, I believe, twice. He did actually practice twice last week. But for us to see for the first time, look great.
Yeah, and it was, he said afterward that, he feels healthy, but it was nice to do the things he said that I did in the past. And it's funny because it's 2 years ago, 2013, that he had that breakout year.
Breakout half year.
And, where 20% of his touchdowns or 20% of his catches were touchdowns.
Yeah.
And no doubt, especially on that first play, you kind of see it, Hugh Jackson, Andy Green, all those, even AJ Green on the other side must have been smiling because that's the question. Is he healthy? Is he back? And yeah, it's just, they've been seeing it, but yeah, Paul, for us to see it and, to kind of make a statement right away, he was happy about it. That's for sure.
I thought that one of the more underrated storylines of last year was them missing his playmaking, particularly in the red zone, an area where they struggled a bit, and Hugh pretty much went to he likes running it in anyway, but went to a very run-centric red zone attack, and I think a lot of that was because they were missing Marvin Jones, who became their most, really, even with AJ Green down there, became their most reliable kind of go-to red zone target. I mean, Dalton had so much faith in him to come down with it and make the tough catch that it really changed the dynamic of what their offense can be. And he made so many big plays, so many tough contested catches. They really missed that. And that was obvious down the stretch last year when Mohamed Sanu was scuffling and dropping passes and Andy Dalton seemed to lose faith in him and everything was going to AJ Green and they were solely relying on him. And then guess what? When he went out, they had nowhere to go.
Right.
And they needed another guy, Marvin Jones. I mean, he really, Marvin Jones, Tyler Eifert, the idea of if they can keep these skill, they can keep this offense relatively healthy. I mean, they have as many weapons as anybody in football. I mean, with the quarterback question,
right.
Obviously. But
yeah, it's and obviously you mentioned the health issues all the way around. But, when you take a guy who scored 10 touchdowns out of the mix, this Bengals offense went from, eighth in passing yards in 2013 to 21st. They went from third in passing touchdowns to 22nd.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a complete 180 in the wrong direction. And, yeah, it's not all just the one guy, but it was one guy who caught 10 touchdowns.
But a lot of that had to do with the change in philosophy where Jay Gruden left. He was so pass heavy. And Hugh Jackson came in to be very running heavy. I agree. I'm agreeing with you that but it was a more dramatic fall off than it should have been. I mean, there was a lot more. You had a lot more where from the two, Jay would have thrown an easy out to the tight end and scored a touchdown, whereas Hugh wanted to just punch it in by running it right up the gut three times. A different philosophy, but still. There was a lack of punch in the red zone passing game. a lot of the year. And that was something that I remember going back to the 13 season when they would show really even any of those 2 years, depending on when Mohamed Sanu had a real great breakout stretch in the red zone in 2012. And then obviously Marvin in 13, if you go back and some of those shows that, Turning Point's one of them. A lot of them do a good job of breaking down some of the film on this stuff. You can see, and they will show, how when defenses can't roll to A.J. Green, because so much of what teams do to this team, to the Bengals in the red zone, is just roll their coverage,
right,
assure that A.J. Green can't beat them, dare anybody else to. When that's what's opened it up for so many of those breakout runs where guys like Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu have been able to rack up touchdowns because it's open, because teams, and then if the second you force them back to normal coverage, 18 is there to,
right,
to take over. And they missed that last year, and their options were very limited, especially without Tyler Eifert, who's also supposed to be a big red zone,
right,
target. So I think, you know, that having those options open can really change things. And Marvin Jones is just a game changer. And I think he will be for this team. He's got to stay healthy. It's been the one bugaboo. I love bugaboo. It's been the one bugaboo in his career. Is just he hasn't been able to stay healthy the whole time. At every pretty much every turn, when he has been healthy, he's produced.
Right.
Another thing that came up this week was I had a conversation with Marvin Lewis. I wanted to talk to him. It's been since the PAT change decision came down. I knew Marvin had been against the idea of changing anything with the
yeah,
PAT. So I was curious his thoughts on that and 2-point conversions and philosophy. So I started in with him, and it was very apparent that he definitely still was very unhappy.
He did not.
No,
or
not thrilled.
He did not like it, and yes, very apparent he was unhappy.
Yeah, yeah. It was very apparent he was unhappy with it. But I want to bring you that conversation that I had. It was myself at first. A couple other reporters joined in with the conversation. But that was interesting, his philosophy, his take on it, how he thinks he'll approach it, and kind of where he feels that his team, in particular his division, kind of got hosed by this decision. So here's a little bit of my conversation about Marvin Lewis in regards to the change of rule with the PAT now moving back to be a 33-yarder.
The percentage of makes from the 30 to 35 are, well, like 92% or something like that. Do you think there will be more 2-point conversions attempts because of the move back?
Yes.
Yeah? Is that something that you have to start planning, you know, a 2-point
package? There's
going to
be more 2-point conversions, yes.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be more 1-point misses.
Yeah.
There's going to be more 2-point attempts.
Yeah.
And there's going to be, and then the weather's going to kick in, so it's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So
you imagine when the weather really starts kicking up, that's when you'll really see.
Yeah. So, I mean, particularly if you don't, teams that don't have a reliable kicker.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a struggle. And, you know, again, I think this division is the most affected of it in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because you have 4 outdoor stadiums with the weather changes.
Yeah. Do you have to craft 2-point packages? More 2-point packages.
You're gonna have more 2-point plays. You don't have to craft 2-point packages, but
yeah,
you're gonna have to have more 2-point plays than what you've ever had. You're gonna have more. You're gonna have to defend 2-point offense more often than you've had to.
Yeah.
I guess that dictates who you got on your team a little bit, doesn't it?
No.
Would some teams have a player could score 2 points? Would you want a specialist that could be particularly good in those type of situations, or is most players can do that type of thing?
It's not going to change. That part's not going to change.
Yeah, I mean, it'll change quarterbacks. I guess defensively, we got to get ready for everything, I guess.
Yeah.
With the vote, did you think there was a chance it would go to the 1-yard line, or was that
no?
You were probably against that because too much.
The 1-yard line would create it would create more plays, it would create challenges, it would create penalties, yeah. offensive interference was in play, so yeah. all those things, which, you know, so it was a proposal that didn't make any sense. Right. And that's what happens when you have people propose shit that's not in a meeting.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
what about that?
Because, you know, a lot of time was spent on the thing, and then, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get this overnight responsive stuff that doesn't make much sense. So
yeah, you are not. I take it you were not for it.
No,
because of the division.
Right? Not been for it. No, I mean, nothing was wrong with what we had, and the division is makes a big difference. A huge difference. It's a disadvantage for our division.
Yeah, I mean,
because we're playing in it all the time.
Yeah. More is it a lot more stress on having a quality kicker then?
Well,
at this
yeah,
point,
I mean,
now for you guys in particular?
Yeah, you got to have it. I mean, when Mike got hurt 2 years ago, we didn't have a guy that would make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 50-50.
Yeah. So if that situation occurred...
3 years ago, 4 years, whatever that was, 2010.
When he hurt on the ACL.
Yeah, 2010. Yeah, right. We'd have been 50-50.
Right.
And we'd have been going for two.
Two every time, probably. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you needed the kick to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Ocho Cinco against Diddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not gonna make it.
Well, 33 is a big difference, I guess. Although Nugent, though, is
well, Mike would focus on that, but I mean, it's a difference in the thing. It's a difference in strategically, and it's a difference because of the division that we play in. So we're gonna, if you multiply, you know, those division games throughout, we're gonna have a bigger percentage of that, you know, weather related.
Yeah.
Think you'll go for two more yourself personally?
Well, we'll see. I don't have to think about anything right now.
Yeah, just worry about OTAs right now.
I mean, the coaches, the NBA, the NFL coaches' characteristic is to be conservative, you know?
Not be conservative. It's to score points. Yeah. And if you're only going to score 50% of the time, why would you go for two? If you're gonna, less than 50% of the time.
Right.
Why would you go for two and have a negative play after a positive play?
Right.
That makes no sense.
So let's try to follow some logic here. And if I'm following what Marvin Lewis was saying in regards to his philosophy and how much it would change, he feels like it's a big disadvantage for teams in the AFC North because it will force them to go for two more often. And if two-point conversions aren't, for lack of a better word, converted at better than 50%, you're losing out on points. But my philosophy would be is that such a bad? I mean, is that such a bad thing? And how, is there really a competitive disadvantage in this? I don't think that there is, because everybody has to play in the same conditions. And at the very least, you're used to those bad conditions.
Right.
You have players here that understand those bad conditions better than anybody. Rather, if you brought in a kicker who's been kicking in a dome all year, and all of a sudden he's playing at Paul Brown Stadium in December. He's got to figure out how to kick there, and Mike Nugent's just doing what he always does.
Right. That's especially covering teams in the NFC North the last handful of years. Robbie Gould in Chicago and Mason Crosby in Green Bay, the two guys who do kick outside. We would talk to them about this every year when the weather turned. And, yes, they didn't like their hard kicker footballs, and it was difficult because of the winds at both facilities. However, they felt they had an advantage over their, you know, Vikings and Lions counterparts who coming in from the domes or those warm weather teams that had to come in because they're like, look, yes, the conditions I was saying for both of us, but to your point, Paul, they said, we've done this every year for however many years. It's not new. You know, we know what the footing is like and the wind patterns are like and all that other stuff. So, and who knows, maybe that's a kicker mind game. You know, mm-hmm. maybe they really, really, truly hate it, but that's what they have to tell themselves. But, I think you're right. The Northern, and it's not just the AFC and NFC North. I mean, you're talking about the Eastern teams, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the Northeastern, like the Buffaloes and the New Yorks and things. Or maybe even, you know, the Seattles where it rains and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, it's a little surprising to just sort of assume worst case scenario. I mean, maybe those teams will lose points in terms of, you know, total points scored throughout the year, handful of points over like the teams of Texas or a dome team.
Right.
But when it's Steelers Bengals, I don't see how that
matters.
You know, no, I don't.
I don't.
And then when you know a team San Diego comes here, let's say the weather's crappy. You know, I don't see how that all of a sudden is a disadvantage to the Bengals as opposed to the Chargers. You know what I mean? So I kind of he lost me a little bit there.
And be better at 2-point convert. You know,
well, there's that too.
You know, I mean, why is there such, you know, and Marvin took some shots at our colleague Paul Daugherty, who has written a number of times about how he believes coaches should be more aggressive and go for it more often and go for two and sort of break the mold. And I think there's something to be said for some of those points for sure. Just you do get a lot of the old conservative coaches that just want it to be the same. They just want to get their one and go back. Well, why not keep attack? Why not go for two? One thing I talked to Mike Nugent about it, and he brought up was, well, there's no shot of a fake if you wouldn't fake it on an extra point now.
I mean, yeah.
You just wouldn't do it from the 15. It's too far to go. I don't know that I've seen a lot of fake extra point two conversions, but they happen occasionally. You know, the threat is completely gone of it. But I just go for, you know, if you can make it at better than 50%, then go for it. And why not have a player on your team or a package, a 2-point package that you're working on constantly? And it's something that he sort of alluded to they would maybe look into, but he said that their personnel wouldn't change. Who they would keep wouldn't change just because you can get 2-point conversions. But this is the Tebow effect,
right,
of what we talked about with Chip Kelly, maybe why Chip Kelly was bringing Tim Tebow, because he could be a 2-point specialist. Terrell Pryor maybe could be a 2-point specialist with his running ability. You get a quarterback in there that can run very well. Obviously, you have an advantage running read options down there and beating guys to the corner and stuff like that. But you still have to be able to throw it pretty accurately.
Right.
I mean, so I just feel like the whole thing is – everyone on the same playing field, and if anything, it's just an advantage to the team that is used to playing in bad weather.
Yeah.
So I the whole idea this is terrible for the AFC North and they got hosed in this, I don't know that I get that or buy that.
Yeah. No. I mean, me neither. It just doesn't really resonate with me, I guess, because all of these guys across the division, are used to it, have to be used to it. So, it could just be the fundamental change, you know, of something that was so guaranteed is no longer that way. But again, even field goals at 33 yards, they're not automatic, but the percentage
is like
only
92.
Slightly drops.
Yeah,
so
you were at basically 99.6 on PATs, and from 30 to 35 has been about 92 to 93 percent make.
So, you know, of course it lowers your percentage of a make. And hey,
adds a little tension in the room.
Sure.
For sure. I mean, that's a little more tension when you need that one.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, it's still going to go through the majority of the time. You're still going to kick the ones majority of the time.
Right.
They're still just going to go for two when you need it most of the time. We'll see if any coaches do go out there and try to take advantage of this. But you're only going to gain maybe a point or two in one direction over the course of the season if you're doing it right. I mean, you'd have to be converting 2-point conversions at, you know, a 60%.
You know what's going to happen?
To really see a significant difference.
You know what's going to happen to you, Paul?
What?
There's going to be like a 57, like a historic, like 57 mile an hour gale force wind off the Ohio River, and Mike Nugent's going to miss an extra point, and the Bengals are going to lose, and Marvin's gonna, both games going to look right at you.
And you know what I'll say? I'll say you should have gone for two. If the winds are blowing at 57 miles per hour, you shouldn't be kicking.
But you know what I mean. Like,
I do
that's
know what you
exactly.
Mean. You're right. This is what I was talking about. This is why the AFC North got hosed.
Exactly.
Because we got to deal with these wins and all this other stuff.
Right.
Well, you know what? You gotta do the analytics. You got to figure it out. You got to know when you go for two and when you don't and weigh that. Bengals fans might not like to hear about more decisions like that ending up in the hands of Marvin Lewis, but you know what? That's part of the deal. Let's close here with a little offensive depth chart. A quick rough draft. I don't want to go too deep into this. I just want to kind of cover it because we're at the point now where we've got this week, we've got next week. There will be a mini camp. We won't have a podcast mini camp week because we'll actually both be out of town. You've got a vacation. I'm getting married, believe it or not. I know, shocking development. But and then I'll be gone my honeymoon after that for a couple weeks. So and then we'll be bringing you very special podcast. I am so pumped. Like, I cannot tell you how pumped I am for our little, our Dead Period podcast series that I've been working on it for a while now. And I can only say, I'm trying to think I can drop a teaser or something in here, is I am just more excited than ever to reflect on what was one of the most exciting times for football in this city and do it really in depth with some really really interesting people who have given some incredible interviews and talked about stuff that I had not heard before and that's stuff I thought was really interesting. And so we're going to have that coming up. So after mini camp, we'll have a run of podcasts on that in our special series that will all end right before training camp starts. Right. And then we will be off and running. So now you know. Now you know our whole schedule. Yeah. So you got to hold us to it. So if any of that doesn't work out, then you can just call us to it. But point being, this week and next week are our last chances before we get back in camp to kind of just do a quick run through of where the depth chart is. So let's do this. Let's look at the offensive depth chart and what we're thinking here. Let's start at quarterback. You know, they have kept only two for a while now. Mm-hmm. Number one is known, Andy Dalton. Number two, a debate sort of amongst us in the media room has been creeping up here.
Yeah.
Of who will be the backup quarterback. Would it be A.J. McCarron? Would it be Terrell Pryor? And arguments have been made on both sides for both. Where do you – I don't know that I've gauged your opinion on where you fall on that.
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit, you know, when A.J. McCarron came out and told us during a workouts in April that he was healthy. You know, I think he's the guy. I mean, just this little bit we've been able to finally see him throw and work. I think the Bengals want him to be the guy, so he'll get every opportunity to.
Yeah.
You know, Terrell Pryor, I think is kind of you referenced before with Tim Tebow. I think is just one of those guys where you just until they prove however many times that they can't do it, you always got to give a look and see. And not to totally discount Josh Johnson, the other QB in the room, but I do think
but
that
pretty much discount.
Yeah, I do think that two QBs, especially when you looked at some of the injury situations that projected starters elsewhere, or you know, we talked about Marcus Hunt earlier on the roster. I think two QBs is where they go, and I do think A.J. McCarron is the one who will end up with that.
The argument for Pryor will be if you needed to go out and win a game right now, who would give you the best chance to? Who would you feel the best that could? And you would say Terrell Pryor's done it before.
I mean, well, he's played in the NFL.
He's played. He's won a few games,
yeah.
And he did them for Hugh Jackson.
Right.
And this is Hugh Jackson's guy now, and he brings something that McCarron can't. I mean, he brings his speed and athleticism in a way. I mean, where we talked about 2-point conversions,
right.
You know, maybe you could even use him on game day in a 2-point conversion package. Who knows? But I still think McCarron, just because in the big picture of this team. But we'll find out. I mean,
right.
We'll learn in the preseason. But I don't – I've heard, you know, rumblings from some people around here talking about three quarterbacks. I don't see that. Like you said, there's just too many other positions where it's dicey. And you don't – guy, you're going to be cutting guys you don't want to.
Right.
You would hold on to Terrell Pryor.
Right. No, that's the thing. Usually three quarterbacks, the reason that third guy is there is because that's sort of that developmental guy – who you like, but you can't put him on the practice squad because mm-hmm. someone else is going to pick him up. And usually then your two is like sort of the trusty, steady veteran, which if you look at it, it's kind of backwards. It's like McCarron's kind of that developmental
mm-hmm.
guy. That, and then Pryor isn't really – he's played in the league, but he's not like your tried-and-true veteran. And
mm-hmm.
even Josh Johnson to that extent, you know, it's kind of – those guys don't fit the traditional molds of,
no.
like, keeping three.
No.
So, yeah, I think as long as McCarron is healthy, continues to kind of grow a little bit after missing almost all last year, I think two is the way they go, and he would seem to be the front runner.
Right. He's probably the front runner for now.
Right.
Running backs to me are fairly straightforward, assuming no injury. I mean, Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, Rex Burkhead, Cedric Pierman, Ryan Hewitt as your fullback.
Right.
You know, all those guys have a very well-defined role. Rex Burkhead's is growing. They, you know, running him more out in the slot. Again, in OTAs, like they, like we saw from him in the playoff game. So his versatility will be big. And I mean, he could step in and play for in place of Jeremy Hill or Giovanni Bernard in the rotation very easily. They've liked everything you've seen from him. Cedric Pierman, obviously a special teams ace. He's been great for the team in that respect. Ryan Hewitt was one of the MVPs of this team last year at fullback. I don't see many other people on this roster anywhere that would unseat anyone that's currently in that spot. So I'd have a hard time seeing much breakthrough there. You get an interesting offensive line because you've got your top five of Whitworth, Bowling, Bodine, Zeitler, Andre Smith. You got Eric Winston, who will probably be here as a veteran. You've got Jake Fisher, who will be here as your second-round pick. Cedric Obwehi will be here, but he could start the season on the PUP.
Right.
It could open up a spot. So you've got then, you know, under the assumption that you're going to keep, you know, your nine offensive linemen, you've got a couple of spots there. You've got guys like TJ Johnson. You've got guys like Tanner Hawkinson who can do a little bit of both. You're still waiting to see if he's ever going to develop into somebody. Trey Hopkins, a guy that they really liked last year's undrafted free agent. And then you've got a host of, you know, undrafted free agents right. This year that they may like.
Yeah, Jake Smith and Chris Jespersen. Yeah, these are the two undrafted guys. Big dudes, big interior centers, guards type guys. So, yeah, it's you know, that back end of that O-line.
I think there's about two spots that are really completely up for grabs. Because you know, depending on what happens with Obwehi the first 6 weeks of the season, it's probably, depending on what the health of others, I think they would probably like for him to start on the PUP, and then if somebody gets hurt, he can come in and maybe take a place, and that'll open up a roster spot. Or he could just be completely healthy, and they just want to put him out there. But I think the fact, knowing that they don't need to play him right away, and they have Fisher as well, that it's probably for the best of everybody that they just, you know, maybe start him on PUP, which would open up an extra spot, which I think would be interesting. Tight end is pretty simple, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Right now.
Two draft picks.
Two draft picks.
And another high draft pick.
Yeah. Two draft picks and Tyler Eifert. And to me, man, if you were talking about guys they can least afford to get hurt this year, Tyler Eifert is somewhere in the top three or four for me. They got nothing behind him. Nothing proven.
Nothing, right.
They've got a third-round pick.
His, you know, track record.
Yeah. You're right, just it. And the guy who has been hurt is the one you can least afford to lose to injury. That could be a tough, because there's just not a lot there behind him. I don't know where, you don't know what you're going to get out of Tyler Croft. He could be the next Chase Kaufman, Sean Brewer, insert bad Bengals tight end pick here. I mean, he could be the next of those. And C.J. Uzomah was a fifth-round pick who's a complete project.
Right.
I mean, maybe he looks the part, but you just don't know. So there's a lot of pressure on those guys, on Tyler Eifert, to stay healthy for sure. But I think those are the three. You know, you've got a sampling of others that could maybe come in and try to compete, but there's not a whole lot of competition there.
No, it's the big kid, John Peters, some of the UDFAs, the John Peters and Matt Langle, kind of the quasi-local guys who, you know, again, nice stories.
Camp bodies.
Yeah, camp bodies. And maybe if they're lucky, you're talking about a practice squad spot, maybe. But you're right. Those are the three, and you're really hoping for health if you're the Bengals for your starter.
Yeah. So wide receiver to round out the offense. There's some battles on the back end here, but if you're looking for leaders in the clubhouse, to me, A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Mosinu, James Wright, I think are your clear four. And then Denarius Moore, Mario Alford to make your six.
Yeah.
After that, someone's going to have to do something to get up there. Brandon Tate's on the outside looking in. Your host of other young receivers trying to make an impact. But Alford is a guy that you can stick in there and hope he's probably inactive for 16 weeks. Denarius Moore can play
right
for you. You know he can play in this league. He can return kicks for you if you needed to. Those types of things. You know.
Here's the thing that's interesting about that. You mentioned the back end of that, which is we're talking about Denarius Moore and the seventh rounder,
mm-hmm.
which Adam Jones, you know, he said, hey, I look out for my fellow WVU kid, but we all got to make the team.
Yeah.
And Mario Alford either needs to be really, really fantastic on kick returns
mm-hmm.
or needs, let's be honest here a little bit, to pick up some ball skills here. I mean, the first few OTAs and workouts have been a little tough for him.
Yeah.
With properly Drops. Receiving the ball. Yep. And now there's a reason Denarius Moore is here is because he was benched and eventually cut by Oakland because he mm-hmm. was dropping the ball. So, you know, there, obviously there's talent. The team likes Mario Alford. They like Denarius Moore. But, you know, I guess if we're going to look around the offense, Paul, and look at a depth chart, yes, those are leaders in the clubhouse. But I think there's enough question marks with those last two spots. Now that also goes back to who else is in camp that can really show something.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, so I don't know. Is that a undrafted guy? Is it a guy who's maybe a veteran, a surprise veteran cut in another camp?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who Hugh and Marvin are familiar with or whatever. But yeah, so I think that back end is interesting, but I think you're right on there with
that's
who they are to start.
Yeah, right now, exactly. Where it probably sits as you go into camp.
Right.
Things can certainly change there, but I think when you look at where they sit right now, that's probably
right.
Where it if you were looking at in the head coach's office, I think those are the six that you see up there
right.
as the ones they would keep. We got a long way to go. We have a whole lot of time to be actually projecting rosters. God knows we'll kill you with that once we get through training camp. But for now, I think it's where it sits. We'll get into the defensive stuff, non-Margus Hunt related. Next week, a little bit more into that. So look out for that at the end of next week. And that'll be the last of the OTAs before the final mini camp. So that wraps it.
Yeah.
To recap, Jim can dunk.
Used to.
Jim used to be able to dunk incredibly.
Yeah.
Even with a torn ACL.
Yeah.
And all 5'10 of you. In the most shocking revelation since we've been doing the podcast together. Yeah. That you actually can fly. Did we play R. Kelly as an out song earlier this year?
Yeah, you know, earlier this year, I don't think so.
We talked about R. Kelly.
We talked about R. Kelly. But, I believe
Chicago.
I can fly, man.
I know, that's what I was thinking. I feel like we did play that.
I used to be able to, so now I can only believe it.
Yeah, you can rise. You can, dunk.
Or you know what? If you want,
or Space Jam.
Yeah, Space Jam's too, man.
I like Space Jam.
Space Jam's good.
I think we can go out with that. I mean,
but I believe I Can Fly came from Space Jam.
It did.
So
but I think we go with the actual Space Jam.
I'm cool with that
song. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, Shaq with Kazam attempting to even be in the same area as Michael Jordan in Space Jam is so. As far as '90s movies. Sports movies go, but where I defend Shaq was as Neon Badeau in Blue Chips, one of my favorite.
Blue Chips was great.
One of my favorite movies, one of my absolute favorite movies. Yeah. So I will defend the acting career, but Space Jam is fairly legendary in the sports movie area. You can't, you have a hard time getting past Michael Jordan and a bunch of cartoon characters.
Yes.
Were you a big Space Jam?
Oh yeah, man. Space Jam. Michael Jordan. I'm like I said, I'm from Chicago.
You're from Chicago.
I'm from Chicago.
You grew up in the Jordan area.
Oh yeah. I mean, Mike. I mean, he came in when I was 3 or 4 years old, and that was when he was Mike Jordan. That was before he was Michael. Mike Jordan.
Yeah.
Just destroying people with like really really bad teammates. In those. Oh yeah. No, Space Jam was it.
Which, by the way. Completely random tangent. I love how everybody rips on LeBron for, he needed to win with Dwayne Wade. He needed Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. He needed to go to Miami in order to win. Yeah, Jordan needed Pippen and Rodman and Grant and all these other guys. Because guess what was happening before he had those other guys? He was losing to Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay, so easy. And I'm not, leading the LeBron fan club here at all. But I'm just saying – stop it.
Everybody
needs
help.
He had to have teammates to win. Everybody needs teammates to win. I mean, if anybody's proven that maybe you don't need teammates to win, it's LeBron. in carrying those god-awful early Cavs teams and this Cavs team that without Kevin Love and, you know, basically a hobbled Kyrie Irving. But that's my NBA hot take for the moment, and let's just end it at that. So let's get out of here. Remember, our podcast will be back next week. We'll have you with the last OTA, some more of what's going on here for you. And then after that, we're into mini camp and then our special series and then into training camp and off we go. It's officially 100 days today until the opening kickoff game in New England.
Wow.
With no Tom Brady, probably. Maybe.
No.
Not a 100 days. Anything to say about it. So we're kind of almost there. So we'll just keep that. Keep your heads up there, kids. It'll be all this off-season garbage will be over soon. And we'll be coming to you next week. Until then, get ready for the Space Jam. We'll talk to you later.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Here's your chance, do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. All right.